Hello, Autism Warrior, and welcome to Barefoot Autism Warriors podcast. I'm Ninka Bernadette Mauritsen, and I am here to tell you that autism is a consciousness test, it's a wake-up call, and it's your chance to turn your life around. And when you do, everything changes. JPC is my podcast guest, is huge on YouTube. He got famous for this video and this one. So he's a massive influencer, but what you might not know about him is that he's also my first coach. We used to run a coaching education together. I met him in 2007 and he released trauma inside of me. He was the first one who kickstarted my health journey and my journey as a health coach. In this podcast, he's going to reveal things about shame, grief, looks, body, self-sabotage, and also his relationship with God and him finding God, what he thinks about the New Age spiritual community, what he thinks about me and how I've influenced him, and how his friends responded when he replaced New Age spirituality with God and Jesus. This episode is amazing. It's bomb. I hope you'll enjoy it. Most of you probably know JPC as one of the biggest comedy influencers on YouTube. Most of you don't know that he is the biggest expert when it comes to emotional healing and healing self-sabotage, and that he taught me a lot of the things that I use now to help moms turn symptoms around for their children and also for themselves. Funny story about this. I texted JP, it's been a while since we communicated, a long time, maybe several years. And he was a New Age when I met him, New Age spirituality. And he recently came to God and Jesus. And I felt that we had to come together to talk about this, to glorify God and bring even more people to God. So I asked him, if you feel called and if there's a purpose in this, if this is like Holy Spirit led, text me back and let's get on a podcast together. And I thought, if it's God's will, he'll reply back immediately. And he did. So I feel that that's a sign that there's a need for this podcast interview. So this is pretty amazing. I'm here with JP Sears, and it's a cycle completed for me. And that's why it's an important conversation that we're about to have for me, because JP, you were one of my first mentors, and so many of the things that I know and teach and use in my daily work to cope as a person, to help other moms, autism moms, turn symptoms around and understand all the different layers of healing, I have learned from you. And we were just talking about, when was it that we first met? And it was around 2007 that you came into the room. We're going to talk a little bit more about the JP that I know from back then. And we're going to move forward to the JP that's sitting here with us today, honoring us with your precious time and words. So thank you so much for being here today. I'm so grateful. So looking forward to this conversation. And I just wanted to introduce you real quick as the JP I know, because I know you as, and I don't know if everybody else knows you like this out there, but I know you as probably the best and most experienced health coach in the world, and one of the best and most experienced experts when it comes to facilitating emotional healing. You are, as the way that I see it, it's almost like a supernatural gift that you have to spot self-sabotage patterns and emotional healing that's needed in a person. And then I see you as someone who's incredibly ripped, you know, physically, but also intellectually, if that makes any sense. It's like, there's so many things I want to understand about that, how you get there, how you've maintained this integrity and physical health throughout those years. Because as we know, in the fitness industry, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, and
underneath the stories, underneath the stories. So I've always found you incredibly funny, even when you were a health coach and not in that field at all. But tell me maybe, and tell everybody listening here, what, because that was not your number one, being funny, being a comedian, that was not the starting point for you. And now that is, it seems like that's your passion and that's what you do most of. So why is that important and what's changed? What hasn't changed?
Yeah, well, first, thank you for all those kind words, Ninka. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody speak so beautifully about myself. And I will answer the question in a second. But first, I do have to say, you've said so many kind things about me. You've certainly inspired me. A seed that you planted with me that I had no idea was going to be necessary for me. But when we met back in about 2007, you know, there I was in Denmark and everybody knew who you were. You had written a book. You were really raising a lot of powerful awareness, amongst other things, on autism issues and the role nutrition has in that, amongst other things, and then nutrition for wellness. And you were taking arrows, like you were somehow a controversial figure for crusading for truth. You were well loved, but of course, we knew you got some heat in the media or people who don't want truth to come out, whatever that is. So, but you just kept going and I got to witness that. And that inspired me because the past 3 years, the nature of my work has really changed as our world and certainly in America, there is like a crusade to smear anybody who speaks truth. And seeing how you did it, it really planted a seed of what's possible and a seed of courage in me. I never knew I was going to need to step up to the plate, but seeing those who came before me, you certainly has helped pave the way. So anyway, you're just amazing, Ninka.
Thank you so much.
To your question about, you know, I used to be a health coach, now I'm a comedian. What's changed? What hasn't changed? What has changed is the form and expression of what I do. So no longer is it I'm working one-on-one with someone maybe on their emotional issues or teaching workshops on nutrition topics. So the form has definitely changed, but the like what actually happens, I don't think that has changed. So the way I do my comedy, my number one goal isn't to make people laugh. Like it's important and hopefully that happens. But the number one goal of the comedy is to help get people to stop believing their own thoughts and find a deeper truth, think deeper for themselves, and hopefully get more in touch with their heart. So now I look at comedy as basically the samurai sword that helps cut through scar tissue of someone's own psyche so they can ultimately be more connected to themselves. So I think sort of like in a way, I use comedy as alchemy to create better psychological wellness. And I used to do that one-on-one in the, you know, the coaching world. And now it's like, I think I sort of do the same thing just at a broader scale and using a different, different tool. Now it's the tool of comedy. So, and that's been a big, weird surprise for me because I never had a plan of like, hey, let's start comedy and let that be a profession. It's just been, I think it was God's plan for me. And I just finally started to listen and fumble my way along one step at a time. So it's weird. It looks like everything has changed, but also like at a more energetic level and how it feels to me and hopefully the impact, it's like that hasn't changed. Hopefully it's gotten, you know, more beneficial for humanity, not for me to say, but yeah, it's an interesting question to think about. And I love that you asked.
Yeah, you've got one of the most watched YouTube channels, you've really become an influencer, a truth teller, a controversial, someone who's actually telling the truth in a way that you can only say it with through humor. The dysfunction and the darkness of this world is almost like it's a different place than back in 2007. So how does it feel to be, because when you are standing out and daring to say these things out loud, how does it feel to be in the middle of that battlefield? It feels like it's a spiritual warfare as well as a practical political war. How does that take a toll on you as a human being? Is there any shame, any fear, anything going on that we can learn from when we feel challenged?
Yeah. First, I would agree. I think what's going on in our world, because you can look at a million problems, a million different issues of division and corruption, freedom fighters, all the things. And I think what is going on is spiritual warfare. And maybe back in 2007, there was just as much evil in the world, but it wasn't so obvious. It wasn't trying to do so much so fast and therefore exposing itself. I'm not sure, but I get curious about that. And then, yeah, here in my little place in it, I think the number one problem that is in the world today is people being disconnected from God. So that's kind of like the spiritual warfare. One side is trying to disconnect people from God and make them your God. And then, of course, God is there where we can connect to. And like, that's kind of the ultimate source of problem. But here in my little role in it, it's great. Like, it would feel awful not to contribute in my small way. It would feel awful not to follow my heart and calling. And, you know, especially like almost 4 years ago when my work changed, when I really woke up to see like, oh, this, there is something really happening here. And for me, it was the beginning of COVID when I realized, oh, the pandemic is not about a virus whatsoever. That really woke me up. And back then, it was way more controversial to crusade for truth, to crusade for humanity and not the pharmaceutical industrial complex or the government or any of these ultra control. Evil is just control. So to not like be obedient to that was controversial. And it was a little bit challenging at times, but also not super challenging. The biggest challenge would have been if I betrayed myself and like, well, it's going to be easier not to say these things. There won't be any backlash. And now, like I unless I'm in denial, and I might be, I don't feel any negativity. Now, sometimes like I'll read an article written by some sort of corrupt media organization, in this article written smearing me, and I feel amused. I don't feel negativity towards it. And maybe some lessons that I see in that I can offer is, first off, I'm 42 years old now. So I'm far less of an approval addict than I would have been 10 years ago or 20 years ago, to the degree that someone is an approval addict, which kind of means like I let my sense of self-worth be based on how I see other people seeing me. And if I'm saying what I know is right, but that gets backlash, that hurts my self-worth. So I'm not going to say that. I'm not getting approval. So if I was still a rampant approval addict, it would drive me nuts. I would be very negatively affected, and or I just couldn't do what I do. But I'm 42 years old. I'm not as, you know, emotionally immature as I used to be. I still have a long ways to go, but I ground my life in knowing what really matters. Yeah, I mean, much like you, I'm a parent now. I have my little boy, and like that really sheds a lot. Like, well, other people's approval doesn't really matter. Like, this precious being matters. being of service to humanity matters, following my heart matters, doing my best to be in touch with and following God's plan for me, that really matters. That doesn't give you approval. It gives you something far significant to approval. It gives you fulfillment. It gives you meaning. It gives you purpose. Those are very valuable currencies. Approval, a lot of times we mistake it as gold, but it's actually a very worthless currency. Like the dollar conversion to approval, it's just like a horrible conversion. But meaning, fulfillment, and purpose, those are very valuable. So an approval addiction, it's something, it's part of the human condition. It's just a matter of like, how much are you aware of it? Usually the more you're not aware of it is the more you are controlled by your appetite for other people's approval. So long story short, being relatively clear on who I am, what I stand for, what my mission is, and what matters, that makes it so it's mostly graceful doing the work that I do, even though I can get backlash and negativity. And then you just sort of frame it like, dude, who am I getting backlash from? Are they part of my wise council of advisors? Are they wise men and women? Or wow, I'm getting disapproval from a objectively corrupt media organization. That's actually approval. Like it would be a worry if they were endorsing me. So, but you know, like Ninka, if you called me up, because you're someone who I have a lot of respect for, and you said, JP, you might have a blind spot. I want to share this with you. I'm going to listen to that. Or if, you know, one of my mentors saying, cool, I want to listen to that. But the approval, disapproval echoes, like that is, that's a game of the ego. And it's not something that I really have in my driver's seat a hell of a lot.
That's so, so amazing. I love that wonderful answer. Would you mind sharing? Because one of the things that I've, it's like a parallel journey that we've been going through of this very fitness oriented, performance oriented, vanity based approach to health, and then being super fascinated about this whole emotional healing, which can become a bit of a pit too. It can become an idol. It can become an addiction. The pain can become an addiction, but also this whole unscrambling of trauma and the past. And so I'm really curious about your journey from new age spirituality, emotional healing, and being very focused on that, and you meeting and acknowledging God along the way, and how that's changed things. Because for me, I've been a controversial person always. I've had my beatings and backlashes, but finding God and speaking about God and naming Jesus, I don't think I've had anything close to the rage and the opposition that caused. So I know that was a lot of different questions in one, but does it trigger something that can make sense for you to share?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the fact that there is rage and backlash when you profess your dedication to God and Jesus, that says something about the presence of evil in our world. And most people, I believe, who are doing the bidding of evil don't know they're doing it. It's weaponized morality because they are good people. Call it the devil's agenda. It is engineered to get into the minds of good people. Oh, you know, I like to think for myself, and that whole God thing, that doesn't make sense to me. Therefore, Ninka, you're an idiot if you believe that. That it really does say a lot to what's going on in our world in the presence of evil. And a fact of humanity is all humans need a higher power. Yeah. We are that needy. Like, try to live without planet Earth. Planet Earth, it is a higher power. The question is, what are people making their higher power? Are they making Bill Gates the higher power, the pharmaceutical companies the higher power? Are they making their own ego agenda their higher power? Are they making the government their higher power? Are they making the news their higher power? A lot of people are. Those aren't very good higher powers, but people are so needy, they will idolize those things. So back to the question, you know, my journey of sort of new age spirituality to I've gotten more Christian the past few years, not perfect Christian by any stretch, but it's like, yeah, this makes a lot more sense to me. I think there was a lot of wisdom I got from the new age spirituality, and it was a necessary step along my journey. And also, I can look at the new age spirituality and say there was also a lot of propaganda in there. And some of the propaganda is designed to disconnect people from Christianity. And I also get curious, like, was that intentionally designed that way? Is that sort of like, you know, here's the devil masquerading as an angel in disguise, like the new age movement? Is that the devil? Or was that just like some sprinkling of like the devil's work in there? I don't know. I got a lot of good from it, but also I see some really propagandized thoughts in that movement as well, which is good to see, I think, in any movement. By the way, you get into any religion, and churches, not all, but churches have a track record of corruption. The devil masquerades as an angel in disguise. So anything that tries to insert itself between you and God, we have to be, or that tries to get you to make it your God, we have to really be careful and use our wisdom to discern those things. So then I would say the past 3 years, I mentioned I've gotten, I would call it accidentally more Christian. And other people have told me that too, because it's one thing you kind of have a wake up moment, like, Danny, yeah, Christianity, I'm going for that. That makes sense to me. Then you pursue it. It's another thing where my story is like, I've just kind of accidentally gotten more that way. And other people have too. And I think why that is, earlier I mentioned, I don't think the presence of evil has ever been more apparent in our world. And, you know, it's not obvious, but it's there. It's pretty obvious, actually. So when you're in the presence of evil, if you're not willing, if you don't resonate with it, or you're not going to like sell the space where your soul should be to do the bidding of the evil and propagate it, the presence of evil, you kind of go in the opposite polarity. And of course, what's in the opposite polarity? That's God. It's like if someone with really terrible body odor walks in the room, you're going to lean in the opposite direction. So I think the presence of evil, there's a blessing in the curse of it. And the blessing of that curse is, I think a lot more people are waking up and finding God because of the evil. And I think that is, that in a way shows God's power, like, you know, cool, here's evil. And God has a way of letting you find him through the presence of evil, which I think is great and needed.
Yes, definitely. For me, it also brought light to the nature of the relationship that I was in. And it's almost like when you're, it's not almost like, it is a fact that when the Holy Spirit is in the body, you get right with God, and you're not right on the inside and in your actions and in your perceptions if you're not guided by holiness. So that really was a wake-up call for me, and I moved away from him and started from scratch, moved back to Denmark. But a lot of people who come out of the new age and to God, they experience that they lose relationships, or they lose friends, or it's a difficult situation in their marriages. Have you experienced anything like that you would be willing to share, how you've dealt?
The biggest relationship struggle for me has been the relationship with myself, because moving away from anything, and like, thank God you move away from something, or else like you're going to be stuck and never growing. It's like if you were in grade 3 when you were 10 and you stayed stuck there, you never moved away. That's a self-imposed limitation. So moving away from something to something that will serve you better, that's scary. And part of the scary part is you have to shed self-identity. So it's kind of like who you thought you were, that has to die. Now, the joke of it is you're not dying. You're actually now able to live more fully and be more alive. But our human mind kind of perceives it to be a death. So there's always at some level, I believe, a relationship struggle with ourselves. And we can be hard to live with because we know who we were, but we don't know who we are. And that can be very unnerving, or it can be beautiful, but probably both on a good day. And then as far as external relationships, you know, that kind of thing, it can absolutely be hard, because a lot of people, if we're not connecting from our heart to their heart, we're connecting self-identity to self-identity. Cool, you're a new age person, so am I, we're together. Oh, you're a fitness person, so am I, we're together. Oh, you're a Republican, so am I, we're together. It's not heart-based, it's just self-identities, and I do plenty of that. But when you allow who you are to change, grow, evolve, and go in the direction of God in this example, then oftentimes those relationships do fall away, and it can be really anywhere from sad to pretty freaking traumatic. And I don't want to make light of it, yet it's also a good thing. You're pruning the branch of these self-identity connections that don't validate who you are. In fact, they invalidate who you actually are, and they affirm who you used to think you are. So in my life, though, just to be honest, I haven't had too much in the way of that, the trauma of external relationships, friendships, or family relationships falling away because I change. And I think, just speaking to my own case, that's for a couple reasons. One, I never had that many friends, and I don't, like, I love people, but, you know, as far as close friends, those really dear friends, but those relationships were actually pretty heart-centered. So it's like, I cheer them on as they change. Like, oh, you're not who I thought you were. Keep going. And they do the same for me. So there were really high quality friendships. And in my family, you know, I have plenty of family dysfunction, just welcome to the club. Yet I'm just also very grateful. My family, like, we don't see eye to eye on everything. I change all the time. Yet there's just still, it's a relationship based on love and acceptance rather than, you know, the approval, like, you are the self-identity that I want you to be, that I expect you to be, therefore we can be in proximity. So, but long story short, I think when those old relationships fall away because you're changing, yes, it can be painful, and also see the purpose in the pain. You know, pain with purpose equals progress. If you can see the purpose in the pain, that's, you know, your branch being pruned for the better, that helps us see more purpose in the pain, so we can let that pain turn into progress. But if we don't see that, we can just torment ourselves because we have a sense of pain without purpose. That's suffering. But we gotta assign our own purpose to it.
I love that. That's so profound. Do you sometimes feel, so if we take a step back and look at life and look at you and look at this whole, the whole health and fitness and diet industry, it's almost like a cult now. Do you still feel like, do you fit in to that whole scenario, what do you see with those eyes of yours that see beyond the surface and beyond the ripped abs? Because I would love for you to talk a little bit about that. I know that for so many women, they see a lot of things online that they want to live up to. I don't subscribe to the whole narrative that because there's a lot of beauty out there, then we are like the whole self-love, body love image thing. I don't like that. And I love the videos that you've done about that, the way that we can victimize ourselves for not stepping into health. So there's a dysfunctional part of the health, diet, fitness industry, and there's obviously a healing part of that whole world as well, that approach. How have you kept that balance? And when does it become dysfunctional and toxic? So how do you stay so ripped and healthy all throughout these years without getting into this whole bikini fitness bodybuilder world that we both know, which is about starvation and binging? And I don't know any healthy bodybuilders or fitness competitors out there. So what's the magic pill for you?
Yeah, well, I think you said it right. The fitness industry into itself, it is a cult. And by the way, I think the world is better off with that cult, because they're a breadcrumb trail of people taking better care of themselves. Not the pinnacle of care, but like, cool, you're exercising, learn to eat somewhat decently. That's self-improvement. I think where we can really root ourselves into the cult is if we view that as the pinnacle of the mountain. It's like, no. They lead you two steps up the mountain. Don't get stuck there, because if you get stuck there, now you're idolizing your body. Now you're getting your sense of self from how you look in the mirror, and please feel proud of how you look, and please be attracted to how you look, but don't get your sense of self from how you look. But you will, if you just sort of stay at the upper limits of the health and fitness industry. And accordingly, you asked, I don't feel like I fit into the fitness industry anymore. I had my time of self-identity in there, but I hopefully kept growing. But now I look at health and fitness in a much, I would say a much more beneficial route, where I believe, you know, maybe we could say the goal is to be a stronger human, not just physically. You can have someone very physically ripped and strong, and they're a very weak human, because we have to understand their mentality, their psychology, their emotions, their relationship with God. So if we just define someone, a strong human is someone who has the courage to serve God's plan. That's kind of like what I would call a strong human. Cool. Then we can reverse engineer that and realize God's plan for someone usually doesn't have them staying in the coffin of their comfort zone. Usually God's plan, you know, there's warriorship, there's, you know, testing you, there's, you know, the courage necessary to serve God's agenda. And that usually means you have to go outside of your comfort zone. So how can, like, the tool of fitness help with that? Now, when I work out, the way I view my fitness, it's an opportunity to put myself through purposeful discomfort, where I think usually the more uncomfortable someone's willing to be physically and emotionally, the better they are to serve God's plan. So it's great. Like, doing fitness, it gives your body much more potential to be healthy, but also it conditions our psychology to be more in tune with God, where, cool, I'm really busting my butt in the gym, filled with lactic acid, I can barely breathe, very uncomfortable. But that's not the purpose. That's training my mind to do that elsewhere. So my work, serving God's plan, like, there's a reason why I keep doing it. I'm, whatever level of discomfort there is, I've gotten used to it. I'm acclimated to it. Whereas I think the, I call it the devil, evil, it tempts people with comfort. So mm-hmm. it's like, well, you don't want to speak out because, you know, everybody else is doing this. And like, look, you get social approval if you do this. The devil tries to tempt you with comfort. And I think if you want to do that, you can. But if you want to be more in line with God, you can't worship comfort. You have to also be a warrior, someone who's willing to embrace discomfort. And that can be cool. Maybe you're ending a relationship, very uncomfortable to do, but you know that relationship's not in the highest vision of yourself. So, and it can just be, I'm speaking my mind, even though people won't agree, but you condition yourself to go into that discomfort through the tool of fitness. It's one way that I use fitness now and how I view it as something other than just two steps up the mountain and then stop there. It's like, nah, I think there's a lot more potential for fitness to help humans be stronger.
And how do you, what's your health, diet, and fitness routine? And how do you implement that for your family and for your child? So are your choices for your child and your family healthy and gluten-free and protein and exercise? Or how are you raising your children? And if you had an autistic child, what would you do?
Yeah, you know, for the first part of the question, my little boy, he's turning 3 next month. So naturally, he basically eats what I eat, which is whole food, usually organic, grass-fed meat, organic everything else. And 99% of the time we're gluten-free. So he just naturally eats that. He doesn't have a driver's license to go out and pick something else up. And then for fitness, you know, I work out at home. I've got my equipment in my barn, and I'll oftentimes bring my little boy out with me for a workout. He's got toys in there, so he's playing, but it feels important to me to let him witness what dad's doing as just kind of paving a path for him. And sometimes like he'll get down and mimic me, like he'll be doing squats or burpees or push-ups. Super cute. Doesn't do them right, but it's super cute. And then for like his fitness, like, yes, I'm kind of planting the seed in the future, kind of paving the way of like strong people do uncomfortable things. I don't want that to be a foreign concept to him when he's 12, like plant the seeds now. But then his fitness being 3, it's just being outside playing. So we make a lot of time to, we're just roaming around the yard, climbing trees, climbing everything, riding his bike. So for him, it's just moving, and that's his fitness. But we have to be intentional to do that, because it's easy to just like, well, it's going to be easier if we just stay inside. It's like, no, yeah, we need to raise our precious little boy in a good way. And then your question, if I had an autistic child, you know, I don't know the answer. Like what would I do? I mean, at a higher level, I could, all I would say is love him or her with all my heart. And there's so many things about autism that I don't understand. And I know there's differences in how the child expresses themselves. So yeah, I would love the child, excuse me, I would love the child with all my heart. And then I think I would also go about learning as much as I can about the child and the condition, so that I can also do my best to meet them where they're at. And I by saying that, I don't want to make light of it, because I know, like, I haven't had an autistic child, and I'm sure there's so much I don't know and so many other challenges.
Well, it's just incredible the way that the statistics show that it's We're getting close to 1 in 7 and in the US, and it's definitely environmental.
And it didn't used to be anywhere near that.
No, exactly.
1 in many tens of thousands is 1 in 7. We need to be alert and realize there's things we're allowing that are doing that.
Yeah, and I think the lifestyle that you have is prevention in itself. What I want to ask you now that I finally have you right here in front of me, which is, this is what I would talk to you about if we sat down for coffee. And that is because this is your massive library of knowledge too. Why do women procrastinate? And why do moms self-sabotage? Meaning they know that they need to change their lives, their lifestyle, their diet in order to turn symptoms around for their children. So they do the opposite. Or they have a toolbox in front of them that can actually change their lives, their children, the symptoms. And they look at that toolbox and they don't open it and get going. So what is the deal with this freaking self-sabotage and procrastination that's almost getting worse every single year for human beings on this planet?
Yeah, so moms that self-sabotage, and I would also say dads that self-sabotage just to be equal, I would say it's because we're weak. Now, I realize that sounds judgmental, but I'll just let that land. And it's not meant to be judgmental. It's just meant to be real. We self-sabotage because we're weak. Now, the good news is that's our fault. We're much stronger if we allow ourselves. But why, what's this weakness about? So going back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, weakness is allergic to discomfort. Weakness just seeks comfort. And the reason why a mother or a father knows, like, hey, I could do these things, I could make these changes, and I know that would be beneficial for everybody, but then they don't make the changes, it's because change is uncomfortable. It's part of human nature. You know, like Ninka, your kids were raised with, you know, eating all organic. So like, that's not uncomfortable for them. That's very familiar. And that's cool because as they're adults, they get to, like, that's their comfort zone, which is a great comfort zone. Then they're better equipped to, like, go further than you into the path of discomfort. But for someone who, you know, a mother who is aware, here's how things, ideally I should eat and feed my kids, but I don't. It's because that change is uncomfortable and they're uncomfortable with discomfort. That's why I think it's so important. One of the biggest things I would wish for the world, everybody in it, is do uncomfortable things. Yeah. And also learn to associate, if it's uncomfortable, it doesn't mean it's bad for me. We let our minds trick us. Ooh, this is uncomfortable. You know, it's change. It's uncomfortable. Therefore, it's bad for me. We treat it like it's a hot stove. But most discomfort that we can logically say, this would be in my best interest, it's actually going to be good for us. So the uncomfortable things are usually good for us, and the comfortable things are usually bad for us. And all self-sabotage, whether it's self-sabotaging in relationships, self-sabotaging financially, self-sabotaging your health, self-sabotaging your nutrition, all self-sabotage from my perspective boils down to people wanting to stay comfortable. And then we can trick ourselves into saying, well, I'm not in a comfortable place. I hate my life. I'm always broke. I'm overweight. I don't like how I look. No, it's comfortable because it's familiar. And the pains of it, you've acclimated to that. So the pains of it are actually your new comfort zone, or actually probably your old comfort zone. So people need to get a little bit more warrior-like. We need, like, the tender, vulnerable lover side of us. But we also need to get more warrior-like, where we look at uncomfortable things and we do them and we tolerate the discomfort. So that's, you know, a high level, quick, broad picture perspective. But that's why I believe mothers or fathers would be ultimately self-sabotaging, because they're just orienting themselves around comfort.
And what are the most important components in sustainable healing, emotional healing, in your opinion and in your experience?
Yeah, you know, for sustainable healing, one is I've always found it beneficial to identify the benefit in staying hurt, broke, sabotage. And that can be hard to do, because we just want to focus on, no, here's all why this is bad. Well, you're still doing it. So clearly there's a benefit to it. So let's just let that be true and take a guess. Like, what would you guess the benefit is for some part of you in staying stuck or staying in pain? So we have to identify that, because usually people won't leave the benefit until it's called out, until we shine the light of awareness on it. Just like Ram Dass once said, you can't get out of a jail you don't know you're in. Well, we're usually in a jail of benefit for being stuck or in pain. So we have to identify what that jail is, what the benefits are, then we can get out of it. And then I think we also need to have a clear vision of where we want to go. So cool, here's where I'm at, maybe pain. Where do I want to go? And not 10,000 steps down the road, but like, where's the next step or two that I want to go? Because if we're not clear on where we want to go, and it might just be like, hey, I want to be happy, I want to, you know, not have all this pain, we have to define it. Otherwise, we're, you know, we have 360 degrees of possibility, and there's a low likelihood we would accidentally go in the direction that a higher part of us wants. So I think finding the benefit to the pain, and clearly defining where we want to go. And then lastly, I would, and there's a lot more, but just sort of like the big picture, I would say support systems are, I used to not believe in support systems so much. And that was just like me being in denial. I think support systems are important, where we don't want to place all of our progress and potential in a support system. That's why it's called a support system. It's not a do it for you system, but a support system. And that can be friends, it can be family. And oftentimes it's actually not. Sometimes it can be a group that you join. It can be a podcast that you listen to, but something that is a like regular connection of information, if not human connection, that represents the new world that you're looking to step into. So I think we're so impressionable as humans that support systems are pretty darn necessary.
I really agree with that so much. And I'm just thinking this, the shame cycles and the self-sabotage and the emotional healing, there's this focus on trauma these years, as well as a focus on physical health. So I was just wondering here to sum it up. Finally, I would like to ask you, what are, since 2007, what are the biggest lessons that you've learned that we can share with people here before we before we round up, about deep and true health and healing? Because there are so many players out there, and I have tried them all, and I have seen a lot of darkness in them too, which is the plant medicine, the ayahuasca, the or the dependency on practitioners and protocols and diets and supplements and the healing cycles. It's almost like it's a trauma loop. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, physically and emotionally, what are the most important things that you've learned? I would love to hear that here.
Yeah, I mean, first off, just how you frame that question and the context around it is very insightful. I mean, you can get in the ayahuasca industrial complex loop. It's just like, cool, like now you're in their self-serving agenda. They probably don't know they're doing that, but they're doing that, and you can get looped into it and therefore lose your power. So, yeah, with your wisdom, I would just echo, I think it's important to see the limitations of any new thing and just know, as a matter of fact, there will be limitations of any new thing you get into. And please get into new things. They'll probably help you grow and move along. But when you make that your religion, your cult, like I'm part of the ayahuasca religion now, this is what we do. Cool. Now you're going to be very stuck. And if you're stuck there, there's darkness everywhere. You're going to be much more susceptible to that darkness. And you're probably going to be telling yourself the darkness is part of the light. So we need to see the limitations of anything. Another random lesson that I've learned is sometimes we have to let go of the good to let something greater come in. And that lesson was poignant for me when I eventually let go of my coaching practice to embrace something that's become greater. And, you know, it's a greater impact on the world. It's even more fulfilling to me. Sometimes it's easy to let go of bad things. Sometimes it's hard when we're self-sabotaging, but sometimes it's easy to let go of bad things. It can be very hard to let go of good things because it's too scary. It's good. It's comfortable. It's definitely adequate. But sometimes we have to let go of the good to let something greater come in. And as we're navigating the health, fitness, trauma journeys, I also think it's important to be aware of the victim consciousness, that it can be, it can get us all, and it will at times. Just hopefully we see it so we don't get stuck in it. And I say be aware of the victim consciousness because it's a very disempowering thing that feels very empowering, because the more of a victim you are, the more significant you feel. But your significance isn't being born out of the true magnitude of your being. It's just being born out of a sense of control and familiarity and feeling like a large victim. And that's how you had mentioned there's people who can become trauma addicts. Like they're doing objectively good healing work, but why do they seem addicted to it? Why are they like just doing this over and over and rehashing old stuff? So it's, that can be, hey, I'm a victim. I've got so much trauma and I'm actually approaching it in a relatively functional way. I'm not just sitting here trying to get people feeling sorry for myself, but you're actually doing it in a disempowering way by staying a victim. So I think we want to be aware of that. And then I also think with wherever we're navigating in the health and fitness, self-growth worlds, it's probably a good idea to ask, is this thing taking me closer to God or further? Is this thing trying to get me to worship it like a God? If so, it's probably taking us further. Or is it empowering me in one way or another to get closer to God? And then ultimately, I think, you know, the part of the health, fitness, wellness journey that nobody has really figured out how to make money on, so nobody really talks about it, is I think it's beneficial for all of us to just speak to God, pray to God, ask for guidance, and have that direct relationship to God. I think it's probably the most powerful thing, but it's the most under, encouraged thing, because who's going to make money advocating like you talk to God, ask for God's guidance, pray to God? I think that is something that is very important.
I mean, it could not be a more appropriate way of ending this conversation, JP. Thank you so much. I love you and I love what you're doing in this world. And even from the day when you walked into that tiny room and you just turned a key and changed the lives of the people in that room. I just knew something big was going to happen in your life. And now you're influencing millions. And I do think that God has an amazing plan for you. And it's already so clear. So thank you for your courage and your bravery and your humor and for everything that you do. Do you have any new projects that we need to keep up on? And where do people find you? The five people underneath the rock that doesn't know where to look you up on YouTube.
Yeah, you know, the best place to find me is my website, awakenwithjp.com. And I've got links there I've got a couple of YouTube channels and all the things that I do. It's just at awakenwithjp.com. And then there's no glaringly new projects. My plate is fairly full as it is. So I'm just trying to keep up right now.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you, JP. God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Ninka. You are just a gem. Thank you for being in my life. And I appreciate you having a voice and being a key to open many other people's hearts. And I appreciate you seeing that in me. And of course, you are doing it as well, sister. So thank you for having me. It's such a joy to see you and talk with you.
Thank you. We'll talk 20 years from now again. Catch up.
Sounds good.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Isn't he amazing? I really love JP so much. He is near and dear to my heart, and I'm so grateful that he came on my podcast to share his wisdom with you. And if you want to learn more from him about self-sabotage, he's actually still training my coaches inside my membership. And if you go to my website, barefootautismwarriors.com/podcasts/158 for this episode, I can send you a link there. I'll put up a link there for you to take a look at the membership, because this month, there's actually a masterclass about self-sabotage that I recorded with JP back when we worked together. It's a coach training session, because I'm now accepting applications for my coach training program. If you want to turn symptoms around for other children, if you're either a professional or a mom who wants to turn autism symptoms around the way that nobody else can and does out there, I am training a small handful of moms. I still have 5 spots left while I'm recording this. And this training with JP in how to heal self-sabotage and emotional healing will be part of the coach training as well. So go to that episode page, and really, if you want to help me, please rate this podcast wherever you're listening to it, whether it's iTunes or Spotify or whatever it is. If you comment and tell people that you like this episode, and if you give me some stars, preferably 5, it really helps me spread the word, and it helps the podcast reach more people, get more downloads, and that makes the algorithm like it more so that more people can hear it. And it's such a motivation for me. So with that said, I hope to hear from you again. You can always write me, contact@barefootautismwarriors.com. And I hope you'll follow this podcast and that you will listen to the next episode as well. Thank you.